So Philippians chapter 1, verse 12. I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel, so that it has become known throughout the whole imperial guard and to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. And most of the brothers, having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. Some indeed preach Christ from envy and rivalry, but others from goodwill. The latter do it out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defence of the gospel. The former proclaim Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, but thinking to afflict me in my imprisonment. What then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed, and in that I rejoice. Yes, and I will rejoice, for I know that through your prayers and the help of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, this will turn out for my deliverance, as it is my eager expectation and hope that I will not be at all ashamed, but that with full courage now, as always, Christ will be honoured in my body, whether by life or by death. For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. If I am to live in the flesh, that means fruitful labour for me. Yet which shall I choose? I cannot tell. I'm hard pressed between the two. My desire is to depart and be with Christ, for that is far better. But to remain in the flesh is more necessary on your account. Convinced of this, I know that I will remain and continue with you all for your progress and joy in the faith, so that in me you may have ample cause to glory in Christ Jesus because of my coming to you again.
Thank you very much, Jill. And let me add my welcome to Dave's. It's great to see such a crowd here on a Sunday morning. Well, let me begin by asking you a question. Do you want to be happy? It's quite an easy question to answer, I suspect, for most of us. Of course we do. What a stupid question. Okay, so my next question is, what's your game plan? How do you intend to become happy? I recently watched a film called The Pursuit of Happiness, based on a true story about a guy called Chris Gardner. And he once was walking along a street, I think in Chicago or somewhere, and he saw a man get out of a Ferrari. It's a bit of a cliche, isn't it? The Ferrari, that symbol of happiness. And he asked him two questions. What do you do and how do you do it? The Ferrari driver turned out to be a stockbroker. And from that moment on, Gardner knew his game plan. And he sacrificed a lot. He became an intern without a wage at a brokerage. He struggled with homelessness. His girlfriend left him with their child. Then she brought the child back, left the child with him and scarpered. And he often spent nights in a subway toilet with his boy because he was homeless. But he had this internship. He had the key to happiness. He just had to secure the job. And he did. And then, of course, the film finishes straight away and we have no idea whether he was happy or not. But there you go. What about for you? What about for you? What's your game plan? Maybe it's a job, like for Gardner. Maybe a relationship. Maybe a bigger flat. What do you think you need? Well, today we're going to be studying the joy of one of the most happy men who has ever lived, the Apostle Paul. And if you know anything about the New Testament, that might strike you as really strange. You see, normally Paul is thought of as, well, for a start, quite a severe character who went through a lot of suffering before then dying as a martyr. Surely we'd be better just sticking The Pursuit of Happiness onto the projector and watching that, wouldn't we? Rather than studying this today. Surely Gardner the Broker has more to tell us about happiness than Paul the imprisoned apostle, right? Well, wrong. Did you see how full of joy he is in verse 18? Just look at it with me. Verse 18. Christ is proclaimed, and in that I rejoice. And over to the next column. Yes, and I will rejoice. You see, more than just rejoicing as well, he thinks he can help the Philippians, the church to whom he's writing, he thinks he can help them become more joyful as well. Verse 25. I know that I'm going to remain and continue with you all for your progress and joy in the faith. You see, Paul thinks he's got a secret to happiness that can make everybody happy. And his joy isn't like Gardner's, a joy that will only come after trouble is over. No, Paul's joy is so strong that it overflows in the midst of trouble, whilst he's still in prison. It's amazing. I wonder, do you want to be happy? This kind of happiness, the kind of indestructible happiness we see in Paul. Well, Paul was joyful when the gospel was advancing. That's what made him happy. I wonder if he saw that. He's imprisoned in Rome under the care of the imperial guard. Verse 13, we're told that he's there with the imperial guard. And he's therefore Caesar's prisoner. That's all the imperial guard is, Caesar's guard. He's on trial for treason because he's been preaching another king than Caesar, King Jesus. But did you notice how positive he is about it all? He kicks off in verse 12 saying, I want you to know what's happened to me. And why? I want you to know that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel. This isn't the tone of someone despondent or downbeat. Paul saw a huge positive in his arrest, and that is that the gospel was advancing. You see, Paul's imprisonment was probably getting Jesus onto people's lips. I wonder if you can picture it. The whole imperial guard, his prison wardens, discussing him day after day in the mess. Who is this strange man? Who's he imprisoned for? Some king, some Jewish king. And that little phrase in verse 13, and to all the rest, it's become known to the whole imperial guard and to all the rest. To all the rest just means everybody else. So it looks like the word had spread throughout the whole of Rome. It's remarkable, isn't it? Can you imagine it as husbands and wives chatted over their pancakes and honey, as businessmen in the forum traded for goods, they also chewed over and traded news about this strange Jewish prisoner who was in prison for following some Jewish king who apparently had risen from the dead. Can you believe it? But of course, the people who got to know the most were the guards themselves. They thought they had Paul captive, but to Paul, they were the captive audience. And you know, Paul wasn't just advancing the gospel himself here. His imprisonment was helping all the Christians in Rome, or most of them, become bolder in evangelism. Did you see that in verse 14? Most of the brothers have become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment. More bold, more fearless to speak the gospel. And that is weird. It's quite counterintuitive, isn't it? If Paul was imprisoned for preaching the gospel, how would that make people want to preach the gospel? Surely they'd look at him and think, I don't want to get imprisoned. But did you notice the key phrase? More confident in the Lord. You see, the brothers and sisters were beginning to realize that Jesus was worth it. That he could still give you joy even in prison. It was worth advancing the gospel, speaking boldly about it, even despite the risk of imprisonment. Jesus is worth it. Now, I think most of us would probably balk at the thought of heading to Pentonville or Holloway Prison. We might just about stay cheerful if we were in prison on the Monopoly board. But even then, that would probably ruin some of our days, wouldn't it? So competitive are we at board games. But Paul so loved seeing the gospel advance and valued his own comfort and his own freedom so little in comparison that he was full of joy. But you know, strangely, prison wasn't even the biggest threat to Paul's joy in some ways. There were Christians, who were using Paul's imprisonment as a chance to hurt him. Did you see that in verses 15 to 18? It's remarkable. Verse 15 onwards, some indeed preach Christ from envy and rivalry, but others from goodwill. The latter do it out of love, knowing that I'm put here for the defence of the gospel. The former proclaim Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, but thinking to afflict me in my imprisonment. Now, I remember when I first read these words about 15 years ago, and I was completely clueless as to how other preachers could want to rival Paul. I mean, aren't all preachers supposed to be on the same team, Jesus' team? Well, unfortunately, as I've gone on in ministry, I've realised my own naivety. You see, Christians, we are brilliant at rivaling one another, me included. At a church I once knew, there were two grown adult women who were both competing to be in charge of the flower arranging ministry. And the rivalry grew so bitter, it split the friendship groups in the church right down the middle. It was remarkable. Flowers. Well, of course then, how much more easy would it be to become a rival of the great apostle Paul? This great man with his great reputation, to want to build your reputation bigger than his, to get your following bigger than his. You see, lots of people were preaching the gospel out of, well, verse 15, envy and rivalry, and verse 17, selfish ambition. And the way they thought to afflict Paul was probably just to discredit him with his imprisonment. Oh, you don't want to listen to Paul. He got himself imprisoned. He's far too gung-ho a preacher. He lacks diplomacy. In fact, with all due respect to the man, he's not actually a very good preacher. I hate to say it, but perhaps it's a good thing that he's in prison. Maybe God's just put him into early retirement. Oh, and by the way, we've got a meeting this evening at our church. I don't know whether you're free this evening now Paul's in prison, but do come along. Well, I wonder how you would have reacted in Paul's shoes. Watching your reputation get dragged through the mud by people who should have been preaching the gospel out of love, should have been on your side, should have understood that you were in prison for the defence of the gospel. Well, I would have been livid. And that's probably partly because I'm somebody driven by ambition as well. You see, there's nothing worse for competitive people than other competitive people. But Paul's spirits still aren't dampened. Isn't his reaction incredible in verse 18? What then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or truth, Christ is proclaimed. And in that I rejoice. You see, what makes Paul happy is not the advancement of his own reputation, but the advancement of Christ's. Do you see that once again? As we saw last week, the issue of values here is key. Just as last week we saw Paul get joy from the gospel partners he saw in Philippi, so here he gets joy at seeing Christ's gospel advance because of what he values most in life, because of what's precious to him. His own reputation, his own comfort, of little worth to him. The name of Christ being made known, high value. It's interesting, isn't it? I think valuing reputation and comfort can poison gospel enterprise. Think for a moment about the unparalleled opportunities we have to advance the gospel in London. All the nations on our doorstep reach London and we reach the world with the gospel. Isn't that true? I mean, just look at the different nations around you right now, sat in this church. Think of the people that have gone out from us, back to their homes, all around the world. Asia, Africa, America, Australasia. It's incredible. I missed Europe, didn't I? Europe too. Trained up and sent out to proclaim Christ because Euston Church exists. But you know, in recent decades, there's been a dearth of ministers prepared to stay in London to grow churches here. And the same could be said of all sorts of places in England. People just don't want to go to them. Maybe the north of England, where Amy and I are from. You see, the lure of the home counties is just so strong. Well, what is it that people value if they're turning their noses up at such great gospel opportunities for the sake of, well, basically often just a nicer place to live? Well, isn't it interesting that compared to the excitement of seeing the gospel spread around the globe, actually having a slightly bigger slice of real estate isn't that exciting anymore? Now, of course, there are also church leaders who stay in London for the sake of their own reputation. Because if you want to run a prestigious church, then where better than the capital, right at the centre of things? And leaders like that can be a real nuisance, and any of us who run a church are in danger of becoming like that. But actually, I think Paul would say that people like that make him rejoice, not because they're doing the right thing for the right reasons, but because they are at least doing the right thing. You see, we all need to pray for ourselves that we wouldn't be driven by the wrong desires. Desires for things that are perhaps good, but just not the most excellent things. Real estate or comfort or our own reputations. We need to pray for ourselves to be prepared to go or to stay where we can best advance the gospel. Not because we're guilted into doing so, but because we actually want to. Because we genuinely get a bigger kick out of seeing Christ honoured far and wide than we do out of anything else, because that's what makes us happy. And I think, at least in my case, that's going to take a miracle. And I guess that's probably true for you as well. So let's keep praying. Now, of course, I should say at this point, lots of us may not have a choice where we live because of our God-given responsibilities, looking after elderly parents, maybe, I don't know, whatever it is. But in as much as it is in our choice, we all need to work out what's best. Now, I don't know most of you well enough to tell you what I think you think is really worth living for. I guess in some ways all of us have to answer that question for ourselves. Though our true ambitions often betray us, particularly as we think about what makes us happy or what takes our happiness away. But if we want to be truly happy, then we need to know that if advancing the gospel is what we care about most, then nobody can ever take that happiness away from us. Because telling people about Christ does not depend on how great we are. It does not depend on our circumstances. It doesn't matter if our life completely fails, our career, our housing situation, our relationships. Even if we get thrown into prison, we can keep doing the thing we love most. Paul prayed in the last passage that we would know what is excellent, that we would know what is best in the light of the day of Christ. Now, Chris Gardner's Ferrari is a lovely car. It really is. I would love to drive a Ferrari. But in the light of the day of Christ, it looks a bit rubbish, doesn't it? That day when Jesus will return to save his people and judge the living and the dead. It just makes Ferraris look a bit pointless. No, don't sell out too cheaply. Now, the second point I want you to see is that Paul was happy to live or die for Christ's honour. You see, Paul's lesson in happiness doesn't end there. Look at verse 18b, top of the right-hand column. Yes, and I will rejoice. For I know that through your prayers and the help of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, this will turn out for my deliverance. Well, you might be thinking, no wonder he's not bothered by prison, because he's certain he's going to be delivered. Well, kind of. But when Paul talks about deliverance, he doesn't mean what we might think he means. He doesn't mean being set free from prison. For Paul, deliverance is having the strength to honour Christ, whether he gets out of jail alive or whether he leaves in a coffin. Did you notice that in verse 20? He, He carries on, "This will turn out for my deliverance," verse 20, "as it is my eager expectation and hope that I will not be at all ashamed, but that with full courage, now as always, Christ will be honoured in my body, whether by life or by death." Paul was happy to live or die for Christ. Living for his honour would mean, well, verse 22, fruitful labour. But dying for Christ's honour, well, that's a bit trickier to understand, isn't it? How can you die for somebody's honour? Well, I take it that partly it's dying with the right attitude. Did you notice what Paul thought about death? He describes it as gain at the end of verse 21. To die is gain. In verse 23, his desire is to depart to be with Christ. And so I guess the thing is that as people saw his attitude to death, that he wanted to die to be with Christ, well, actually, they were seeing something about Christ, that he was precious. And in that way, Paul honoured him. I remember one of my relatives dying from cancer when I was a child. She was a Christian. And in the face of death, she was so confident, so full of joy. And I had absolutely no idea why. I thought death was just this black chasm that swallows you up forever, never to be seen again. And I'd never really seen any evidence to the contrary. But this relative, in her death, set me on the road to finding out about Jesus. She, of course, was gutted to be leaving her family behind. Don't get me wrong. But she knew that being with Christ for her was better by far. It was an incredible, incredible witness. But you know, actually, the picture here for Paul is more complex than we might at first think. You see, Paul doesn't just look forward to dying. He's actually torn between death and life. Because what motivates him is not just what's best for him personally, but also what's best for others and for Christ. He's torn. Verse 21. "For to me to live is Christ and to die is gain. If I'm to live in the flesh, that means fruitful labour for me. Yet which shall I choose? I cannot tell. I'm hard pressed between the two." Now, I sometimes want to die when things get overwhelmingly hard. The seventh night in a row without sleep because of my newborn child. "Lord, take me now." But did you notice that Paul doesn't want to die because things are hard? He's got a positive reason. He wants to die to be with Christ. Paul loves Jesus. "I just love living without pain. And when I want to live, it's normally because life is comfortable. When I have a bit of money in the bank, a nice home, a happy family, a satisfying job. But Paul wants to live fruitfully for Christ. He wants to bear fruit for Christ so much that he would rather stick around in a world where he is constantly going from prison to prison, just to help other Christians rejoice as much as he does. Isn't that incredible? Did you see that in verse 24? Christ's honour comes before everything for him. To remain in the flesh is more necessary on your account. Convinced of this, I know that I will remain and continue with you all for your progress and joy in the faith, so that in me you may have ample cause to glory in Christ Jesus. You see, Paul wants everybody to grasp how great Christ is, to glory in him, to find their happiness in living for him. I wonder, can you imagine being excited to die in order to be with Christ? Can you imagine being excited to live because it means getting to live for Christ? Maybe you do experience that sometimes. Can you imagine being so excited about both of those things that you're actually torn between the two? It's a happy position to be in, isn't it? When you've got two great options on the table. Amy and I have had to scrimp and save for holidays whilst I'm studying at college. And she's on maternity leave. But her parents, who are retired GPs, have a different problem. After years of hard work and earning their way, their problem is choosing between the sun or the snow. the Maldives or the mountains? And often they just choose both over the course of the year. But anyway, both destinations seem so good. What a happy place to be in when you long to do both. It's a win-win situation when you value Jesus Christ so much that you long to live for him, that you long to die, to be with him. Can you say it then? To live is Christ and to die is gain. Can you say it and mean it? I don't know whether I can. You see, yet again, it is incredibly challenging stuff from Paul, isn't it? Because let's face it, sometimes holidays evoke these kinds of emotions in us much more than Jesus does. And we might start to think that this kind of love for Jesus is only really for apostles. But again, just in case you've forgotten it, verse 25, Paul wants to stay on earth for the Philippians' progress and joy. He wants them to glory in Jesus as much as him. So, what do you make of Christ? Do you glory in him? Do you love him? Do you want to be with him? Do you love advancing his gospel, helping others glory in him? What is Jesus to you? I love Ken's phrase that for some of us, he's just a get out of hell free card. Well, he shouldn't be. He should be the goal of our lives and our greatest treasure. Now, one of you said to me last week, okay, you're talking about how much we should value Christ, so why don't you just show us Christ if we're supposed to try and value him? I mean, how are we ever going to value Christ if all we ever talk about is Paul, Paul, Paul? Well, that's a great, great question, isn't it? But partly the answer is, come back for chapter 2 and 3, when Paul will show us Christ in a big way, in his all-surpassing worth. But first, Paul wanted the Philippians to know about his own life. And the question is, why? Why not skip straight to Jesus? Well, I think the answer is that when it comes to changing our values, the Holy Spirit has decided that first we need to see what valuing Christ looks like in practice for the man Paul before we look at Christ himself. A fascinating way round to do it, isn't it? Because I take it that actually a lot of us know a lot about Jesus already. I mean, think about the last 3 years at Euston. We've studied Luke's Gospel, Mark's Gospel, Romans 1 and 2 Samuel. We know loads about Jesus. But the issue is that, well, we don't often make him the source of our unending joy. And so the challenge of Philippians is, what are you going to do with all that stuff you know about Jesus? Will you let it percolate through your heart, your mind, your values, your attitudes, so that he really becomes your greatest treasure? You see, Philippians deals with us, like we said last week, from the inside out. Values produce fruit. And therefore, just as much as Paul in verse 19, we need prayer and the help of the Spirit.